On this episode of Tactical Faith Radio, we interview James Harleman from Cinemagog.com about the new movie Noah. James is an excellent critic of cinema and how it relates to the Christian faith and worldview. In addition to that, he's written a book called Cinemagog that you can pick up on Amazon, and he's also an accomplished speaker. Please join us while we listen to James and hear his thoughts about the new movie Noah. And if you enjoy this podcast, please go to tacticalfaith.com/donate and help us out so we can keep this podcast and our other streaming events free or low cost. Thank you.
Let's be honest. Talking about our faith, it can get hard sometimes. Who was Jesus for real? Sometimes we get caught up in the world. Sex, religion. But now, the world will have to get caught up in us. We're here to talk about our real faith. We're here to talk about the real God. For unapologetic apologetics everywhere, welcome to Tactical Faith Radio.
We're talking to James Harleman about the Noah movie. I think everybody's seen it here except for Eric, right?
That is correct.
Okay. Yeah, me and Matt saw it the other night, and man, there was a lot there. Let's just dive right in. What were your initial thoughts? Not about content of like theology or anything like that, James, but. What were your initial thoughts about just the movie quality of it, the cinematography, the storytelling, the script, the acting? Like from a movie standpoint, what did you think about it?
Well, this is where I'm going to probably differ with a lot of what it seems a lot of the general critics out there. I mean, it's trending pretty high. In fact, it seems like the critics are giving a lot higher praise than a lot of even viewers, if you look at some of the averages on the aggregator sites. But honestly, I found a lot of it fascinating, but it felt like disparate pieces coming together that didn't all fit. And so I was, in one way, very disappointed because I just didn't feel like there was stylistic consistency anywhere. I mean, there were parts of it. The opening almost had this odd throwback old school movie style. But then a lot of the effects, like, you know, the Rock Lords, you know, that looked like something out of Lord of the Rings. And then occasionally then he'd use stylish colors and almost flat 2D imagery and shadows. And it, I don't know, it felt to me like Martin Scorsese, Tim Burton, Zack Snyder, and Roland Emmerich all got together and took parts making pieces of a movie and then put it together. It felt like a bunch of styles that didn't mesh. And so, which is usually strange. I expect that a biblically based movie coming out of Hollywood is going to probably be horribly inaccurate. But look a whole lot better than Christian stuff. And I kind of feel like Aronofsky let me down.
Hey, James, this is Matt Burford. I mean, the thing that I took from it, I mean, with his book, with his movies like Requiem for a Dream, Pa, The Fountain, Black Swan, he's got a really good reputation for some pretty amazing films. It just seemed like from that perspective, it seemed like it wasn't even in the top five of things that he's done.
No, at least, and you know, I have my gripes and my appreciations for those other films, but stylistically, usually, I mean, you watch Pi, it has a very, I mean, it is tight in the nuance and visual and pacing, and this just kind of, there were parts that were really sluggish here, and then I felt like they rushed past certain things, not that they even had to hit biblical notes specifically, but just the narrative felt like it slowed down unnecessarily and then sped up. Dashed past 9 months with nothing. And so I will say the performances were, you know, Jennifer Connelly, I think, had the best performance in the entire film. No offense to Russell Crowe. But when she confronts Noah, there was a pretty very just dynamic emotion that was kind of unparalleled, I thought. But really, other than her and Crowe and Hermione, Tubal Cain, just Shem and Ham and a lot of the side characters just felt like they weren't even there. I just thought the performances were kind of poor.
Yeah, I thought that scene with her begging Noah not to, you know, not to kill the children. And by the way, there's if you're listening to this, there's going to just prepare for spoilers. Okay, so just stop right now if you don't want to hear spoilers, because we're going to give some. But I thought her, her performance reminded me, it was almost as gut wrenching as that little girl, the scene of the little Japanese girl from Pacific Rim. I thought it was close to that level as being. I just thought that was a great scene.
Yeah, and when they just allow, when they allow one of the female stars to just look so broken, pathetic, and her face, there's just nothing pretty about her. She's so broken in that moment, and it's just, so that was a daring and well shot scene. But that's my problem. I thought there were some beautiful moments in the film, but just nothing that ultimately came together. I think I had less. Most of the problems that I hear Christians squawking about aren't my problems. My problems was I just felt ultimately it was an artistic fail.
Yeah. How do you think it compared? I didn't see Pi, but I saw what was the fountain? Yeah, the fountain. And I mean, I know he's known for just out there kind of storylines where it's, you know, very, very esoteric, but I mean, I thought there was definitely a dimension of that to this. But then some of the, you know, some of the things I've read about it, like Matt sent me that an article yesterday comparing it to Kabbalah and that kind of thing. I mean, I guess it could be, but where do you think, as far as the story goes, where do you think it was? Where do you think it was headed? Do you think he was trying to retell the biblical narrative in his own way, or do you think he was trying to basically take a Noah framework and apply it to a completely different story?
There's actually a great article I'd recommend in The Atlantic. Can't remember who wrote it, but it's an interview between the article writer and Aronofsky. And Aronofsky lays out pretty plainly, and I just don't have I don't feel like I have a large reason to disagree that he's effectively a cultural Jew. So he's approaching it not necessarily, I mean, he's approaching it from a Jewish perspective, obviously looking at the biblical account that Christians would hold to, but then also looking at a lot of extra material. And from when you look at Pi and some of the other films that have touched on Kabbalah, obviously he was raised and filled with some of those other ideas and narratives. I think he's just a cherry picker. I mean, I don't think he's beholden to anything, and he's taking the bits that he thinks are the most fascinating and applying them. There's actually a good there's a big article that's circulating by a guy named Mattson about the connections to Gnosticism and the Kabbalah. I think there's a great, if you want to check it out on patheos.com, there was actually another article sort of mixing up some of the responses to that. It certainly doesn't adhere close enough to Kabbalah or Gnosticism, certainly not Gnosticism in its view of the creator, or even that the physical world is somehow lesser. I mean, the physical world, apart from man, is kind of lifted up and revered, almost to the point where you'd almost think it's an ecological message, although I don't think it clearly does that either. So I think the man's just playing with things in the same way that I think Taylor Hackford played years ago when he made The Devil's Advocate. He's totally not a believer, but he did one of the most fascinating portrayals of Satan on screen that I've ever seen. Here, I think Aronofsky is just playing with various tropes that he's experienced and telling what he thinks is the most interesting story. And again, I don't think it doesn't fall apart artistically, or it doesn't fall apart narratively so much as just about the styling. I think his narrative actually had some curious things to say. I'm sure we'll get to it in a minute.
Yeah, I was looking at this while you're talking about it. I'll put these in the show notes. The link to those two articles that we mentioned, and I think it's one of the things that I've seen people having problems with, and I just really had no problem with, was were the things like the angel, the interpretation of the angels. I had no gripe with that at all. I mean, the whole Nephilim, breeding and creating giants thing. I mean, that's just weird. That's just flat out weird anyway. So, I mean, to take something like that and, you know, reinterpret it in some other way, I really don't have a problem with it, you know, theologically, because that's, you're getting that stuff is so theologically hard to grasp already. So I didn't really have a problem with that. I thought the overall story, let's just take all the theology out of it for a moment, as far as like how well it adheres to Old Testament theology, that let's, you know, just taking all that off the table for a moment. I thought at the core Christian message, I thought it actually stayed intact, which is mercy is better than justice. And in God's eyes, he can give mercy, but he can give justice, but he chooses mercy. He's justified with taking a position of justice, but he chooses mercy instead. And I mean, if you just take that as the Christian message, as the sum of all theology, that we could have, that God was justified in taking a hardline justice position with us, but he chose not to, he chose mercy instead. I thought that message was clear and central to the film altogether. What do you think about that?
I wouldn't disagree. It seems like I'm not sure if I'd use the word clear in regard to how many people I see seem to be missing it, but I would say, I mean, it was clear to me. So, and clear to you, obviously. I guess that the big question that I came out of was not, I mean, obviously, we've got rock angels, we've got what looks like some weird post-apocalyptic mining ruins. We've got all these other things that obviously aren't playing with just the plain biblical narrative. And then the character changes, right? I mean, Noah seems to, in scripture, seems to get clear verbal from God. And here he's struggling to interpret imagery so much that it seems like he goes off the deep end. And that's freaked a lot of people out, the homicidal Noah thing. But my real question was, have they mischaracterized God? And I don't believe that they did, because I know a lot of people have been struggling with understanding that. But I think what Aronofsky's done, whether he intended to or not, is taken bits of Abraham and Moses and thrown them back into the Noah story. I mean, you think about Abraham, we always have the comfort of understanding when he's taking Isaac up to be sacrificed that there's going to be a ram at the end. If you grew up in church, you already know that end's coming, so you never have the sense of dread. Or if you were Abraham's wife or somebody else who knew his intentions, you'd be thinking he was going up there to gut his son. And God doesn't let him know exactly what he's doing until the very last minute. And then you look at Moses, who had to jump and seemingly had to insert himself between God and wiping out the Israelites several times, thinking he was very delicately pleading and inserting himself between God's wrath and the people, not knowing, you know, as a systematic theologian I can be, that God was creating some foreshadowing of the intercessor and the intermediary that Christ would be someday. Moses doesn't know that in the moment. Moses is probably wet in his pants. So there's a space where Noah has a struggle that I don't think is in the Noah narrative, but plays itself out in the way God interacts with his people and even the people he raises up. There, I think he wins.
Interesting. Either you guys want to follow up? I don't want to monopolize here.
No, I think he's spot. Yeah, go ahead, Eric.
Okay, hey, this is Eric. I am a pastor. I have not had a chance to see the movie, but I've read a lot of reviews. And one that I read that was really positive by a Methodist writer commended the movie. He said that really he saw the highlight of the movie in the accuracy with which it kind of communicated the message that we lose sometimes when we talk about Noah's Ark and have colorful pictures on the walls for kids and things, which was that the message really was the pervasiveness of evil and sin. And he commended that. But I've also read others who said one of the shortcomings was that it misrepresented Noah in that it did not really present him as more righteous than those around him. And I was just kind of curious what you guys think of that.
Well, I'm not sure. I think it did portray Noah as more righteous, but the film does go out of its way. I mean, Noah even himself at one point when he's particularly feeling down says he didn't choose me because I was better. He just chose me because I knew I'd get the job done. And there is that. I mean, depending on your theological background, I mean, there, you know, how much more righteous was Noah? I mean, the first thing he does is get drunk, which I guess some Christians have even have complained about. How dare they? Like, well, have you read your Bible story? He gets drunk right afterward. Aronofsky tries to actually build some reasoning in. Scripture is a little ambiguous as to why he just chooses to go there right afterwards. So he tries to sort of create a reason. I don't know how well that worked, but the fact that he's just witnessed the death of the world and talks about how, that sin is so horrible. They use a phrase I loved called, he says, like, we humans, we broke the world. Like, it's all on us. It's all on our sin. It's all on our horribleness. And the depravity is pretty severe, from abuse of women to just, I mean, people look pretty horrific. Murder seems to be the order of the day and totally fine. And so I think they could have done more with a few more scenes to flesh out some of the various aspects of depravity. But man, I got the sense that Noah, in one sense, was struggling to be better, but was a far from perfect man. He was still a sinful man, and he didn't compare him. He didn't, part of that righteousness that he's been giving, he is getting himself some unmerited favor. He's not perfect. He's not Christ. And I thought Aronofsky tried to portray some of that juxtaposition. So I thought it worked out good.
Yeah, and actually, this is Matt. Actually, I think that's one of the things I thought about later on. He did such a good job with Mickey Rourke in The Wrestler in showing, if you remember that movie, and showing, this broken man who's been involved in this, this industry that has just destroyed him and put him through a crucible. And he did more with that character than he could in with Noah. And I understand that. I mean, you read the Noah narrative, there's just not, there's only a chapter or two, I don't remember, but there's a very short narrative there, and he has to fill a lot of holes. But again, the more I thought about it, I thought, man, here's a guy that made movies like Pi and The Wrestler, and they were just wonderful character plays, especially Mickey Rourke, pretty much, took an actor who was going nowhere and put him right back on the scene again. And there was a little bit of that in the way he portrayed Noah, but it's like he didn't go all the way with it. I just felt like at the end of the day, something got lost on the cutting floor or something, because it could have been so much more.
And maybe part of the failure, I mean, I hate to say it, is because of all the tension of how it was going to affect different people groups. And maybe that's why it ultimately falls short, is because between producer and director, the studio, kind of all the pressures and complaints even before it came out from Christians. I remember people freaking out that, Noah didn't have a daughter. It's like, well, the characters, it says three sons. It's not the daughter. Like, wait till the movie comes out. Actually watch the story first.
It would have helped him. It had almost served him better. And I got this from a buddy of mine to call it Gilgamesh. and then nobody would have had an issue with it. And he could have gone as far as he wanted to. And there would have been no potential minds that he had to worry about.
That's true, but I think we have a culture and a community, if we're just honest with ourselves, where we like to freak out and we like to jump to judge and we like to give we like to jump out with justice swords instead of giving grace first or learning a little bit more what that's about, and that it's a proclivity in our culture, Christian culture in particular. You look at the snake imagery in the film, and I've heard a lot of people have tried to tie in that somehow that they're justifying the devil or that ties in with some of the Gnostic and Kabbalah stuff. And to me, clearly the visual imagery was that when if Satan entered the snake or Satan became the tempter, that you see the snake rip open and a black tainted snake comes out of the very pretty snake skin. So here you have that, the tempter comes into the world and perverts, and the good skin is shed. Like, that was supposed to represent Paradise Lost, not somehow that Satan is good or the serpent was right. I think people miss the imagery, and they're just looking for something to pick on.
What did you think? I thought that the another kind of central theme, or maybe it wasn't a theme or even intentional, but there was a whole lot of staring at the sky, and if you look, and a whole lot of asking God, why won't you answer me? And I think it never really gave an answer to why. It never tried to kind of solve that problem, I guess. But it seemed almost like a cultural commentary to me. I mean, if you want to, from a Christian standpoint, that's probably one of the biggest things that we deal with today is the hiddenness of God, especially right now in history. This idea of, you know, why is God not more visibly or audibly active, you know, in day-to-day life? I mean, that's a real issue that even as Christians we struggle with a lot. And, you know, sometimes, and we've all had those times where we're like, you know, we want to cry out to God, well, you know, why will you not just answer me? And I thought from that standpoint, I don't want to just like shed praise on the film all the time. I mean, I thought it had some issues like you, but I thought that was sort of a raw, honest way to look at something that as a Christian I deal with too. I mean, sometimes I just want to say, God, why won't you answer me as well? I thought that was just kind of an honest commentary on the state of Christianity. I don't know what everybody else thinks, but
I would say of all the strong points that I resonated with, just in the juxtaposition of having Tubal-Cain and Noah both offer that even, you know, for the clearly depraved man, even to the struggling to follow man, that we both find ourselves not hearing in the way we want, not getting the discernment we want, wishing he'd just be a little more obvious on certain things.
Yeah, totally.
I've felt that flail at many junctures. He's been, when I felt like God was clear in my life, I mean, I look back over 40 years, it's only been once or twice that I feel it was so solid. I couldn't later think maybe it was just a little bit of me and a little bit of something else.
Yeah, I thought that's a good point you just made. Isn't it? It wasn't just, you know, Cain or Noah. You know, it was both of them, and that, you know, I guess that maybe kind of goes back to that whole point of that Noah made, and again, which I think is probably, you know, stays consistent with Christianity, is as we know it, as with Orthodox Christianity, that there is sin in all of us. You know, Noah said, he had that realization, hey, we're not better than these other people. Mm-hmm. We got it. I mean, I thought that was a pretty gripping scene where he's telling his wife, you know, he's listing out all those, the sin that is inherent within each one of them. You know, like, mm-hmm. Hey, this is, you know, we need to be a little more sober about this thing. And to me, that was just another, you know, he's that realization. He's like, yeah, God talked to me, but maybe he won't again. You know, I'm not guaranteed that. That seemed pretty consistent with Orthodox Christianity to me.
Hey, let me butt in here for a second. Hey, Eric, are you still on?
I sure am.
Hey, Eric, let me ask you a question from a pastor's perspective, somebody that's been in a pastor for a while in Indiana. When you have somebody come to you, like with the question that's raised out there, you know, Eric, Pastor Eric, have you seen Noah? Should I go see it? Mm-hmm. How do you prepare yourself to answer that question?
Well, that is a really good question, and I was going to kind of pose the same kind of thing. And for example, like right now where I am, in the town where I am, I have had a lot of Christian people say, you should see The Son of God. That movie is not The Son of God. I'm sorry. God is not dead. There are 2 or 3 out right now. They said, God is not dead. It's incredible. But of course, by and large, most people really hate the idea of this Noah movie that's not kind of a literal retelling. And maybe more honestly, it isn't something that can be received super easily without any kind of real examination and make you feel kind of affirmed and safer in your faith or something like that. Matt, to answer your question, my general encouragement would probably be to say to see this movie, because my feeling is that good or bad, really, regardless of how you feel about it, it will open opportunities for us to talk about the truths of the scriptures and of the story of Noah with people that we wouldn't have otherwise. So end of the day, I say, yeah, go see it. Watch it critically, you know, decide whether you think it was a good movie or not, artistically, but theologically. But this is a tool for us where millions and millions of people will probably be eager to talk about this that we would not have otherwise.
Yeah, I think so, too. And James, one of the things that's for what happens down here in the South, we will take we will take most media and turn it into a discipleship training course. You know, like a big thing down here is Andy Griffith and Christianity. You know, well, they'll take 6 months and talk about all the Christian themes in Andy Griffith because it seems like Eric's is safe. But, you know, and they'll the thing that bothers me is we won't use the same scrutiny or do the same thing with the Noah. And is it just because we're afraid of it? We're afraid of somebody taking our holy text, which I get. I mean, that's our holy text. You know, I get it. But, you know, I've seen Sunday school classes that have taken the Matrix and have spent 2 or 3 classes on why Neo was Christ, you know, but yet we'll take, maybe it goes back to what you said earlier. We're kind of society that likes to argue. But it seems like we want to put a wall up quicker now than we ever have before. When somebody takes something like this and puts a spin on it. Whereas, you know, in my personal life, my mother has been in Genesis more over the last week than she's ever had her entire life, you know, which is a positive. But at the same time, I want to be protected to our holy text, you know, and I don't want to go too far with it. I want to know where this wall is coming. And are we getting more sensitive as time goes on? Are we putting up walls too fast? Or is it that we have to protect ourselves and evaluate everything?
Well, I think the wall, you know, I think the wall is the problem. I think the quick to evaluate should absolutely that's the part I want to keep. In fact, I think that's the part that we were woefully inadequate on in previous generations, even understanding what media and TV really meant to our minds. Kind of, I mean, so I like the quick evaluation. I mean, yeah, but the ability to grab it, look at it, bounce it around a little in the field of discussion, actually read something from Aronofsky, read a few articles on some of the different imagery you do find. I mean, it just, yeah, I mean, that should be the way that we grow firmer and then go back to our Bibles. I mean, my father-in-law asked me, doesn't it say that they went out and brought the animals onto the ark? So it wasn't the whole, they just sort of, you know, get compelled to all fly over according, you know, mammals first, or sorry, they, you know, like the reptiles first, then the mammals. And I actually got myself caught up for a minute. He asked me and I stopped. I was like, wait a minute. Yeah, let's open this up together. And you know what? In one verse, he tells Noah to bring them in. And the very next verse said, and then they all came in together. So I don't know. Like, it's one of those places where I guess we do have some, you know, Aronofsky has artistic freedom because you could view it as is them sort of collecting, bringing, or coming, depending on how you read that. So, you know, did they all just of their own volition sort of scurry in there, or was there some participation with the humans? So even that, it drives us back to our scripture to sort of firm up what we know and don't know, or what we've imported from those Bible stories and boat pictures and animals and the giraffe head sticking out the top.
Plus, we want to be producing Christians that won't be afraid to make a good movie. I mean, from Ben-Hur to The Mission, you know, to, you know, Chariots of Fire. I mean, we're talking about movies that are Christian in nature, but they're also really fabulous movies. Mm-hmm. And we should be producing people that want to get out there and make movies like The Mission and not be afraid of the blowback.
Yeah, I've heard you say before, you know, or, you know, talk about how, you know, we can get, how we can take any movie and get something out of it. Don't try to sum it up as either good, hey, this was a good movie, or this was a bad movie. Don't try to just kind of like come up with a one word assessment of a movie like that, but take, you know, you can, every movie is going to be available for you to come in and analyze in some way and get something out of it.
And we can so surprise those who don't agree with us if we come out with the agree points first. Like we can totally get, you know, if what we lead with is, hey, you know, artistically, I thought it was a little up and down, but I really liked that he got this one aspect of God's character so right. Like that, like, when do we ever start that way? It's always, oh, hated this, hated that. Hey, here's my hate checklist. And, well, you know, we can get to that. I can always come round to this, you know, as a pastor, if I'm sitting down to talk with somebody about their life, I like to lead with the places where I seem to be seeing that they're doing really well. Like we can come around and I can get to the sin before the meeting's done. but you know, I mean, it all depends. If we think about the way we watch as the way we also then relate, I should be looking for that. I should be looking to where at moments where he characterized the creator, since, you know, we don't say yeah. God, you know, where he got that right. And sometimes it's revealing where we think it's wrong and it's not.
I'll have to be honest with you. I mean, when I saw The Fountain, I walked out of that movie completely lost. I mean, I had no idea what I just watched.
And, oh, no, I'm with you.
I mean, I still, to this day, I got no clue what that movie was about. And it seems like there was some similar type stuff in Noah, like that didn't really. You're just kind of like, what? I mean, like one of the things that stood out to me was you see, the pregnancy. I mean, it's like it took like a week. I mean, was it supposed to really be 9 months, and they were doing a fast forward, or is he saying that? Because, I mean, they were only on the water for 40 days and 40 nights, correct?
Well, biblically, yeah. So it seemed like he was going for – I took it as he was going for more time.
Oh, okay.
That was – I guess – but they were twins. It could have been premature, I guess. I don't know.
Oh, yeah. I didn't think about that, yeah. 3 months, that's awfully premature, though.
But I did like how, if you think about it, probably then he did adhere to scripture, and ultimately all three sons and three wives were on the ark.
Okay.
He had three women. I mean,
yeah, that's true. What about the little glowing rocks? I mean, any idea?
No, there were some things where, like a David Lynch movie, he threw in some.
It was the exact same rock that was in Pulp Fiction in the case, right?
Yeah, that's what he's got in Pulp Fiction. You've answered it.
Yeah, it's what's in. I've actually answered Pulp Fiction mystery. only here on Tactical Faith can you get that kind of level of movie dialogue.
I was taking it to mean. I was taking it to be some sort of like leftover, like a, you know, in the Narnia series, how there was like when I think it's in the very first book where the world is spoken into existence, and it's like for a while thereafter, you know, you had the lamppost which was grown. It's like for a while after creation was so fresh and so potent that all kinds of strange things happened. Anything would grow, and that was one of the effects. And I took it as being sort of like a leftover. The world had been broken and screwed up really bad, but there was still some. It was still close enough to creation that there was these little pockets of potent, just leftover pieces of creation almost.
So it was like a Big Bang ember.
Yeah, something like that. Yeah.
Okay. Some leftover remnants of, and that, yeah, the special element, which probably then by our time is all used up, or
yeah.
Or cool. I guess, you know, we could always have Noah 2 where they discover it in modern day, and
yeah, that's funny.
You know what? Something I really like too, which I think I've heard people complain about the articulation and visuals of creation. And they complain because they're obviously taking the theistic evolution road with some of the imagery that's chosen. And, you know, no, never mind the fact some great guys I love like C.S. Lewis would have been right there with it. In fact, C.S. Lewis would have even seems to suggest that he was cool with the evolutionary development of man. But yet, Aronofsky's visuals clearly present an evolution of the world, but then a very special creation of Adam and Eve, special creation of man. We don't see the monkey morph into the glowing Prometheus alien. You know, he goes for a theistic evolution of the entire creation itself, but then man is this special luminescent image bearer. Huh. I want to sing that praise. I mean, like at the end of the day, that's where I'm willing to accept a variety of views on that, but I'm really kind of an all about the special creation of of mankind, even if some macroevolution was employed. I'm not saying it was, but that's I can roll with everything except where I kind of chafe is the idea that man was actually there. So he stopped short and gave us specially created humans. I thought that was cool.
Well, I know you got to run. We won't keep you. You want to sum up? So you're basically what I'm hearing you saying is, we can take a lot of stuff out of it, a lot of stuff away from this movie. Theologically, it may be odd, but not completely off the mark. That we can take it to. That's probably not a good way to say that, but maybe theologically we can work with this and talk to people about it in a way that makes sense to Christianity. But from a story, from just a cinematography standpoint, from a movie making standpoint, it's kind of weak. Is that fair?
I would, like Matt said earlier, if this was called Gilgamesh and had no connect and had very little connection to Noah or biblical ideas, I probably would just say it's a 2-star film. Mm-hmm. And just kind of average, just because of the ways I felt like it broke and fell short. Because it's tied, I would go, as a Christian, I'd recommend seeing it more like it was a 3-star film, just because, yeah, there's obviously going to be some space for testing, equipping, growing in your own, and maybe conversing with others about your faith.
Oh, okay. Oh, that's a great way to talk about it. All right, well, we'll let you go. That's why we have you on, James, because that was awesome analysis. If you need to, if you're not familiar with James's material, go to cinemagogue.com, check out his stuff, check out his book. We've had him at our conference before, and he's awesome. We plan on having you back as much as possible. Appreciate your time, James.
Totally. I'll sign off for now. It's raining outside, like we're working on a sequel. So
okay. Awesome. Thanks, man.
Thanks, James.
Thank you. Bye.
Bye.